This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? Then give us a call now at 1-800-462-7413. Always some interesting research along with the calls, Zorba. What do we have this time?
We're going to talk about raising HDL, the good cholesterol in your body, through an artificial HDL particle. Nanotechnology.
Wow.
Very interesting. And getting less sleep, what it does to your body's ability to fight colds, and what it does to your body's ability to essentially fend off a heart attack. Two research articles, fascinating data. Mm-hmm.
Coming up, what's our recipe?
Hot hummus pockets. Remember that recipe?
It's quite a few years ago.
That's right. It's from the vault.
This one from the vault. Again, that toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And don't forget, our medical mythbuster is coming up later in the hour, too. Let's get to the phones now, Zorba, and a listener with us in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I'm a Thai food addict. It's absolutely a problem for me. The thing is that they use coconut oil in a lot of what they make. And I read a study that said coconut oil was related to a decreased heart rate in heart disease rate in Thailand. So my question is, in spite of the fact that coconut oil is actually solid at room temperature, isn't that supposed to be the worst kind of oil for you?
Right. Well, that's exactly right. Many, many years ago.
You're, by the way, absolutely an expert on this question, because not only do you know all about coconuts and coconut oil, you've been to Thailand.
That's right. I've been to Thailand. That makes me an absolute. And I love Thai food. I love Thai food. And I love the Thai culture. So it makes me.
You found the world expert.
That's right. I'm the world expert on Thailand food and culture. The tropical oils, palm kernel oil, coconut oil, palm oil. These are called, these are basically called the tropical oils. And the tropical oils actually raise LDL, or the bad cholesterol, and have a tendency to lower the HDL cholesterol. They're not good for us. And many, many years ago, well, not many years ago, but about 10 years ago, there was a whole movement against tropical oils. There was a very wealthy person in New York City who decided to take it on himself, took out advertisements in the New York Times and put on billboards, tropical oils are bad for you because palm kernel oil, which is the premier tropical oil related to coconut oil, it's the same family, it's from a palm tree, was used in cooking everything from French fries to latkes to potato pancakes and things. So that oil is actually not very good for us at all. Tropical oils are actually not good oils. And you're right. Oils that tend to solidify at room temperature on the whole tend to be the worst kind of oils they are. So you don't want to cook with it. If you'll notice, it's hard to go to the store and get tropical oils to cook with. But you're right. Thai food uses coconuts oil. But let me ask a question. How many days a week do you have Thai food?
Oh, I'd say maybe 2 or 3 times a week.
So 2 or 3 times a week. How's the rest of your diet?
I'm very healthy.
Okay.
Salads and whatnot.
So you see, you fit what I call the moderation, the middle way. You know, the middle way is I'm going to enjoy some of the foods that may not be the best for my body, and I'm going to spend most of my time getting foods that I know are really good for my body.
Isn't 2 or 3 times a week a little much to be doing coconut oil food?
I don't think so. I don't think it's that much. You're not
even for someone with a healthy diet.
Not at all. I don't think so.
I
think 2 or 3 times a week are fine. The issue is that if you look at the number of meals we have, if you look at 7 days a week, 3 meals a day, okay, that's 21 meals, and then we snack. And snacks for many people are another 5 or 10 meals. You're talking about 25 to 30 meals a week, which the average American eats, okay?
Mm-hmm.
3 meals out of that, nothing. Don't worry about it. Nada. Enjoy your Thai food. You know, the Americans think of food as a medicinal issue. The French think of food as something je ne sais quoi, or however you pronounce it. You know, it's part of life. It's the enjoyment of life. So I think 3 days a week is perfectly fine, but do not cook with tropical oils unless you are making Thai food.
Good to know, because I was using it in brownies.
I would definitely not use it if you're going to use oil in brownies. You want to go to the best oil for a brownie, and that would be safflower oil. You know, or flax, really? You know, or flax seed oil. Safflower oil is really the best. Safflower oil and olive oil, but you're not going to use olive oil in brownies.
In brownies. Just said.
No. What is your favorite Thai dish? You have to tell us.
Oh, definitely the Penang curry. I'm an addict. Delicious.
Ooh, I've been in Penang a couple of times. Let me tell you, Penang curries are delicious things to eat. Mm-hmm. Enjoy it.
I will. Trust me, Zorba. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks much.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi. How's it going?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I had a baby about 6 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And she was born at 36 weeks and 5 days because I, at the very end there, I developed some pregnancy-induced hypertension. But my question is, since then, my blood pressure doesn't seem to want to kind of go back down to normal levels. My OB, you know, gave it a couple of months, and, you know, we tried weaning me off my medication a couple of times. And, you know, each time it would kind of creep back up into, like, the 140, 150 over mid to upper 90s range. And then, so he sent me to my family doc, and he ran a bunch of tests, and I did a bunch of tests, and they still can't really find any reasoning. And I was just wondering if maybe you had any ideas of something to look at, or if it's just kind of a physiological change that my body is.
And she's there saying, quit talking about yourself, Mom. Pay attention to
know.
Me.
Yeah. She's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, she's just talking, going, hey, Mom should be here. What's going on? Well, first of all, there is pregnancy-associated hypertension. So you get that when the pregnancy is done, that blood pressure disappears. And for some people, it disappears right away in a day or two. And for some people, it takes a longer period of time. So your baby is how old at this time?
6 months.
6 months old. So pretty much, you know, by that time, that sort of high blood pressure is going to be gone. I mean, it's gone usually within a week or two.
Yeah.
So the next step is, you know, do you have high blood pressure? And is there something going on besides normal high blood pressure, which comes from, we now know, comes from the fact that the arteries themselves just are not as pliable as they should be. Now, will the pressure go away? Sometimes with exercise, weight reduction, and salt restriction. So what's your height? What's your weight?
I am 5'2", and I weigh about 120.
Okay, so the weight is not the issue. How much alcohol do you drink?
None.
Okay, so alcohol can be an issue because if you drink more than 2 drinks a day, that can do it. So let's talk about salt. Salt can be an issue. So my recommendation is you go to a low-salt diet and try that for a couple of weeks to a month, and then you'll see. About at your age, about 10 to 20% of the people are salt sensitive. So the way to take care of it is do not cook with salt. You can put a salt shaker on the table, but my recommendation if you put a salt shaker on the table is do it very minimally, and kosher salt tastes saltier. And the reason is they're just bigger crystals on there, and you actually often get less salt if you sort of sprinkle kosher salt over the top of your food than if you just take a regular salt shaker and do that. And stay away from processed foods like, you know, canned soups unless they say low sodium. Try that and see what happens.
Okay.
You may just be a salt-sensitive person, in which case you'll be able to get off the medicines and you just watch your salt.
Okay.
Good luck. Good luck
much.
With the baby.
Yeah.
Your baby sounds just wonderful.
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
But let me disagree with you, Zorba.
Okay.
Don't do the low sodium soups. They taste awful.
Oh, they taste awful. You've tried them?
By mistake. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. This is true, Zorba. You can really get artificial HDL cholesterol in some kind of medicine?
Well, it's rather interesting. First of all, it's only in the very, very early stages. But we know that HDL cholesterol, the good cholesterol, kind of mops up the bad stuff in our body.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. The HDL cholesterol comes in there, mops up the lipids, the fats that are in the body, and gets rid of them in a way. We know people with high levels of HDL cholesterol do really, really well.
Right.
People with low level of HDL cholesterol often have heart disease and have premature heart
attacks. So what's this though?
Well, this is an interesting – it's a nanotechnology where they basically took a molecule that looks exactly like HDL. It's made with sort of gold, believe it or not, within it. – gold particles that are basically, that you basically swallow in a capsule form, goes into your body, and the idea is it'll then be absorbed, go into your bloodstream, and mop up the bad cholesterol. Sound good?
Is the gold the stuff?
No, it's just part of the molecule. It's the sexy part of the molecule. It's not there. It's supposed to look like HDL, but when people say gold, they immediately go gold, using gold in a molecule. But that's it. But gold, it's very interesting, has some therapeutic uses. Many, many years ago, when I first started out, we used to give gold injections for arthritis. So gold has actually been used for arthritis for many years, for about 100 years. And gold is often used as a contrast agent in certain types of medical imaging. So we actually use gold.
So could it be when, after this is tested, is it conceivable this would, what, take the place of the statins that we're taking
or,
now?
Or it may be in addition to statins. The problem is for some people who have an exceptionally low inherited HDL, they get premature heart attacks at a young age. So you have men and women who may have an HDL normal, you know, is in the 30s to 40 range.
Yep.
But a low one, if you've got one at 20 or 22, you are just a setup for a heart attack at the age of 50, especially if you have a family history, if you're overweight, if you smoke or anything else. So this may be another way to help people get free of heart disease, which is the major cause of premature death.
It's interesting.
It's on the horizon. It's not available right now.
Right.
But if we can raise HDL, we may reduce heart attacks another step. And frankly, we've reduced fatal premature heart attacks by 60% in the last 25 years because of technology. This is another feather if it works.
Interesting. 800-462-7413. A listener now in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hello. What's up?
Well, I have a question that I don't know. I don't know if I want it answered, really.
Wait a minute. Let me get this right. This is a call-in radio show. You're calling in for medical advice, and you don't know if you want an answer to the question you're calling in?
I might just be calling for a little flattery, you know?
Oh, okay. Well, hey, we aim to please. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I have been exercising frequently. I exercise every morning.
And you're looking really great, I should say.
We can tell in the radio. You're looking great.
Thank you. I'm 34, and I'm noticing that I'm really starting to get tired. And I've tried some diet changes, and I've tried a bunch of things to try and boost energy, but nothing seems to really work. And I just don't want to know that I'm getting old and I can't work out anymore.
Well, let me assure you, you are getting older, but you can work out forever. So let me assure you that. But let's go ahead. What is your age?
I'm 34.
Okay, so I mean, I had to tell you something, but we don't call 34 old.
No.
You know, old is 25 years older than I am, and that's what I call.
We called that old when we were seven.
Right. There you go.
You know, but I'm feeling it. I'm a woman, and we feel it a lot earlier. I think.
Where did this sexist pabulum come from? You're a woman. We feel it earlier. Wait a minute. I mean, I'm a guy. I'm a feminist. I mean, men and women have to feel, you know.
I am woman.
Easily.
I am tired.
but there's a difference. There's a difference when, you know, I have things that are not gravity proof. You know?
That are not gravity proof. Now that's another topic. That is another topic that's different. How much sleep do you get?
I've always been a very low sleep person.
Yeah, how much?
And I can't sleep any more than about 6 hours.
Okay, so you get 6 hours at a time. Okay, this is what you have to do. First of all, this is not an age-related issue. This is a sleep and rest-related issue. It's a meditation, sleep, rest-related relaxation issue. It's not an age issue. So first of all, do not give up your exercise. Stay with your exercise. Very important. But you're only getting 6 hours of sleep, and, you know, that's your sleep pattern. You know, you can't stay in bed for 7.5 to 8 hours because some people can do that and some people can't. But what you can do is in the middle of the day, you can take out 20 minutes for a power nap. You lay down, you you have several ways of doing this. This is what I call your 20-minute space in the middle of the day. You can meditate for 20 minutes with a breathing meditation that you can learn about from a yoga instructor, or you can learn about it from books. You can lay down, which is my favorite way to do it. You set a clock for 20 minutes. You find something you want to set, not a buzzer that buzzes you after 20 minutes. That's the worst way. I have a chime. Seriously, I have a chime that I bought at home, and it's a chimer, and after 20 minutes it does a little ping. It just sort of wakes me up. I may be meditating. I may be sleeping. And that's what you need in the middle of the day. Now, if you lay down and decide to do it as a nap cycle, don't expect to fall asleep. Sometimes you will fall asleep, sometimes you will not, but you are giving your body a rest. And the problem with Americans is we don't give our body a rest, and it craves it. So you need a spot where you're not bothered. And let me tell you, that will give you energy. That's what you need to have in your day. But look at what you used to do, you know, when you were in high school or college. You know, I would fall asleep in the middle of a German class. It's the best time. And I would
wake
up feeling...
Isn't that funny? I took German, too, and I don't remember any of it.
Well, you must have fallen asleep, too.
So. I must have.
So thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
800-462-7413. We have our recipe coming up, but before that, Zorba, let's sneak in a quick tip. You'll remember not too long ago we had a caller who was worried that he was allergic to his wedding ring. Remember that?
Yes.
Wasn't that long ago? Debbie in St. Louis, Missouri, sent us a great tip for him to try. She suggests brushing a thin layer of clear nail polish on the inside of the ring to protect against the metal. She says that you'll have to recoat from time to time, but that it should allow him to wear his ring more often.
Absolutely a great idea. That's absolutely a great idea, because that a lacquer is basically a neutral substance that you can use, and that's great. Matt, the wedding ring, a beautiful, wonderful point. You know, I always love it when listeners send us in advice, because it means not only are they listening, but they are thinking. And we know public radio people are thinkers.
Well, we know that we don't have all the answers, so send us your lifestyle tips in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
The recipe coming up, more of your calls, some interesting research, our medical myth buster. Great reasons to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. You're on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, that toll-free number. More calls coming up, but right now it is recipe time. We're starting a new segment this week that we're calling Recipes from the Vault. More often than not, we get requests from listeners who are tracking down old recipes we've shared on the program from months, maybe even many years ago. So from now on, from time to time, we'll be digging deep into our archives to dust off an old recipe that you may have misplaced or just missed, and we'll be highlighting it once again. If there's an older recipe you can't find in our online archives, send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org, and we'll see if we can't pull it from the vault.
So, now without further ado, the recipe for hot hummus pockets.
Hot hummus pockets. I love it. I mean, this was one of the recipes that I know my kids really enjoyed. Now,
I forgot. Just what date did we do this recipe initially,
I know the daytime. I know the exact. January 1st, 1912. That's when we did this recipe.
Have we been on that long, really?
We have been on the early 1900s. Since before radio, frankly. January 1st, 1912.
Funny we were doing the program and there wasn't
around anybody, anybody can ever
waiting.
Hear.
We're waiting for radio to kind of come in.
Okay, let's do it again.
Okay, start out with a can of garbanzo beans. Very important to take that can and rinse the beans and drain them.
A can of garbanzo beans rinsed and drained.
Remember, you know, when you buy canned beans, if you rinse them, you basically rinse the carbohydrate that is around the bean that has seeped out of the bean, and the bean tastes crisper. It's not really crisper. It just doesn't have the mealy taste that's around there. So when I use beans in a recipe, unless it's soup, I always rinse my beans.
Mm-hmm.
1/2 cup of sliced scallions.
A half cup of sliced scallions.
That's right. 1/2 cup of non-fat plain yogurt, not vanilla, not sweetened. It's non-fat plain yogurt.
Well, I got it. 1/2 cup of non-fat plain yogurt.
Now, in a lot of hummus recipes, we use sour cream. And sour cream basically has more fat in it. So, once again, we always want to grab away
that's
the fat.
That's what this is. The yogurt is a substitute for that.
That's exactly
yeah.
it.
Okay.
1 tablespoon of sesame seed paste.
A big tea sesame seed paste.
So we'll get a little oil from that. Seeds always have oil, but they have the good oil. Seeds have good oil. That's generally the case.
Okay.
The way that it is. 1 1/2 teaspoons of crushed fresh garlic.
A teaspoon and a half crushed fresh garlic.
That's right. Fresh will be better. I mean, you can use a pre-cut garlic, but once you open up the can, it begins to deteriorate or the jar.
Mm-hmm.
But I use it when I'm using large amounts. But fresh garlic is better. If you love garlic, feel free to pile it on.
Yeah.
1/4 teaspoon of ground black pepper.
1/4 little tea ground black pepper.
That's right. Now, in addition, now you need 6 medium whole wheat pitas.
Okay.
Why do we go to whole wheat? Because whenever we can, we always want to add whole grains to our diet. It makes it better. It tastes better.
Mm-hmm.
If you've not tried whole wheat pitas, they're wonderful. They really are good.
Okay.
18 fresh spinach leaves.
18 fresh spinach leaves.
You know, so a little package of spinach that you get from the market. 3 medium plum tomatoes, thinly sliced.
3 medium plum tomatoes, thinly sliced.
And 8 ounces of low-fat shredded mozzarella cheese.
8 ounces low-fat shredded mozzarella cheese.
And most of the mozzarella cheese that we use, mozzarella, of course, is used in pizza all the time because it's gooey, it's sticky. We like the texture of it. Most of the mozzarella that we get actually is low-fat. But read the label because, once again, it's a way to reduce fat from your diet and make it into a healthier recipe. And that's what we want. So let's put it together.
Okay.
Combine all of the filling ingredients, the garbanzos, scallions, yogurt, sesame seed paste, and crushed garlic along with the black pepper in a food processor and process until nice and smooth. Set aside. Then cut each pita round. So it's cut there. 2/3 around the edges and carefully open the pita and spread about 1/4 cup of the filling over the bottom layer. Then top the filling with 3 spinach leaves that you're putting in there, 3 slices of tomato, and 1/4 cup of shredded cheese. Now, coat a large nonstick skillet with olive oil cooking spray. That way you're not putting the olive oil in and adding the other oil that you don't need.
Mm-hmm.
Preheat it to medium. Cook the sandwiches on the skillet until the bread is lightly toasted and the cheese is melted. Lightly toased, melted. Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, I guess at times. I was just looking at this recipe. You call it a sandwich. I guess it's a sandwich.
Of course it is. You know what it's a variation on? It's a variation
on
toasted cheese.
It's like a cheese sandwich,
sure.
Yeah.
Cut it into 4 wedges, serve it hot. I mean, I think about my mom and toasted cheese. What did she do? You know, she would take a piece of white bread.
Sure.
That was her tradition. She would slather it with butter.
Yeah.
She'd put it into a toasted cheese contraption or fry it on the stove with a top on it. She would have American cheese, which doesn't have much to it, and she would melt it. And basically, that was a high-fat recipe.
Yeah.
And although I do have a toasted
it tasted
cheese
pretty good, though, didn't it?
Well, it reminds you of your childhood.
Yeah.
That's what it does. But if you had this, if you had a hot hummus pocket in your childhood and your mom gave it to you, that would remind you. It's reminding you of mom. But this is, getting back to the recipe, a good way to use cheese, make it whole grains, has a wonderful taste to it, but it's kind
of
like a very...
Yeah, you've got some spinach and some tomato in here.
You've got spinach and tomato and onion. It's a dynamite recipe. It's really, really good. I highly, highly recommend this recipe. I think you'll like it. When we look at the calories, it's about 400 calories per recipe. Where's that coming from? The calories are really coming from the mozzarella cheese for the most part. But it's a wonderful, wonderful recipe. The fat is low. Try it.
Mm-hmm. And again, if there's a recipe you remember but lost in the move or spring cleaning, let us know what it is, and it might end up being our next recipe from the vault. Just send that email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast. Search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
Our phone number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller, is in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
My name is Bobby, and I used to work at a coffee shop that my friend still owns, and I had a question about coffee. Now, through working there for as long as I did, I learned a few different things about light roast and dark roast. Like, light roast coffee has more caffeine because it's not cooked off, and dark roast has less caffeine because it's cooked off.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, dark roast has more carbon in it because it's cooked longer. Now, I was kind of curious about the health benefits between the more caffeine on the light roast, but the less carbon and the less caffeine with the more carbon on the dark roast.
By the way, this is a great question. I mean, it really is. You know, it's interesting. I just went to a medical conference recently where someone took issue, and they said, you know, often when we say this is a great question, it's when people really have an awful question. And we're trying
true.
To answer
that
it.
Is true. As someone, as someone who did a morning right. talk show for a million years, every time some guest said, that's a great question, you knew it was a terrible question,
no,
an easy one for the guest to answer.
You know, it's very interesting. But this actually is a great question. So I want to tell you, I'm not insulting you. I'm actually telling you it really is a great question. And the reason is, and I don't have the exact answers, coffee is interesting. The way it's brewed has an effect on it. We know that the Norwegians, who traditionally boil their coffee in Norway, and I don't know if they do it in Sweden, they do it in Norway and Finland, they boil their coffee, and it appears that that produces an increased risk of esophageal cancer. And we think it's from boiling the coffee. So the way the coffee is brewed may actually have a factor. We know, for instance, that coffee has many, many benefits. First of all, it is the most widely used drug in the world after nicotine. Nicotine increases often the ability to actually do things in the body. I mean, it causes you sudden death at an early age. But often if nicotine stimulates the body, coffee stimulates the body, it's widely used. We know that boiling it may be bad. We also know it may prevent diabetes. And we know that the way American coffee is brewed, from what we can tell, it does not cause cancer.
What may prevent diabetes?
Coffee. Coffee drinkers often appear to have a lower risk of diabetes than non-coffee drinkers. Tom is smiling at me because he knows I'm pro-coffee. I must disclaim I do not own any Starbucks stock, and I do not only stock in Hills Brothers or the other companies that make coffee. But you bring up a good point. I don't know the answer to it in terms of whether it's carbon or not. I know that it appears the way we brew coffee in America is not associated with anything bad. But there's probably not much of a health difference between one versus the other, except for boiling coffee like the Norwegians. And we don't do that. And frankly, that makes the coffee incredibly bitter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever boiled coffee, but if you've done it when you're camping, it doesn't taste very good. Have you ever boiled coffee?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, so you know what the taste – it's a different taste.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That coffee is not good for you. So good luck. Enjoy your light roast. I'll enjoy my dark roast.
And you'll both be perfectly healthy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Amherst, New York. Hello.
Hello. How are you guys doing today?
Great. How can we help you?
My question is about the shingles vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my understanding is that shingles is related to chickenpox. And that if you, now correct me if I'm wrong, but if you haven't had chickenpox, then you should get the vaccine. Well, I'm like 90-some% sure that I never had chickenpox. My mom said I didn't have them. I didn't get them when my son had them. I have never had them. And I really don't want to get shingles because my mother had them twice in her life, and it was a very painful experience for her and stuff. And so I'm thinking about discussing it with my doctor, but I like to educate myself even before I do that. So if you have had them, would it be harmful to get the vaccine?
Well, I want to commend you on educating yourself before you go to a doctor, because frankly, you know, the educated consumer is the better mm-hmm. consumer. It empowers you. When you get the information, you're more comfortable, and then you can make a rational decision of what you want to do. Because, you know, basically your health is in your hands. You can find out whether or not you ever had shingles. You can get a blood test. That's what I would recommend. Chicken pox.
Yeah.
I would recommend you get a varicella. That's the name of chicken pox. Varicella titer, and see if you ever had it. If you never had chicken pox at all, then at your age, you would probably get the varicella vaccine. You probably wouldn't get the shingles shot. And that would probably immunize you. And once again, it's both of these shots are slightly different. So a decision would be made at that point. But I would get tested to see whether or not you ever came down with it. Because if your kids got chicken pox and you didn't get chicken pox, chances are you had chicken pox.
Because I remember when I was in second grade, kids were like breaking out in school.
Right.
I mean, like they'd come to school healthy and all of a sudden, you know, they were like popping out with them and stuff. And I didn't get them.
Right. So the chances are pretty likely that you've got an immunity there. And if that's the case, the real issue is, do you get it below the age of 60? Now, the reason I mention that is because the FDA has not recommended the vaccine for people under the age of 60. And the reason is the data doesn't show it's been effective.
Hmm.
That's the data. The FDA did not accept the data between the ages of 50 and 60 as being necessarily effective. So the real issue is, do you really get it early, and will your insurance cover it? It may cover a varicella shot, and then after the age of 60, you can then make a decision if you're going to get the shingles shot. We give the shot, by the way, because immunity tends to wane over time for chickenpox. That's what it does. And when we get older, our immunity wanes, and the virus, which is live, which has been in the body, you know, then bursts out.
Mm.
So get tested with a blood test. That's step number one for you.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
You're sure. Welcome.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413. Time once again, Zorba, for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. A little while back, you were joking about the acronym that our segment Stump the Doc forms, STD.
Yes.
Remember,
that's
we
right.
were talking about
yes.
that?
Yes.
And you insisted that it was a drug.
Yes.
Well, it took all of about 4 seconds for our entire listening audience to send us an email letting you know that the STD acronym was indeed for sexually transmitted disease.
Right. Right.
The drug you were thinking of, according to one listener, Janice, was STP.
Oh, they're right. It was STP. It wasn't STD. It was STP. That's right. Well, that's in my vault. That was in my memory vault. I stand corrected. That drug was STP, exactly, which was phencyclidine. That's right, STP, a horse tranquilizer.
She writes, I remember it because STP was or is the name of some product you can put in your car
right.
to boost its performance.
Right.
So I thought the name was ironic. STP is an acronym used for many things, but among them is the illegal drugs Serenity, Tranquility, and Peace. And Alyssa in Knoxville, Tennessee concludes that maybe your error was due to a hallucination from LSD. You don't need to react to that. And that concludes this edition of Disagreeing with the Doc, whose acronym hopefully doesn't stand for any illegal drugs. Send in your rebuttal for our next edition in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster. And we have some more research coming up right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. And you can get to us right now if you use that number. Before our next call, though, Zorba, some really interesting research with which I identify, having to do with the association between lack of sleep and catching a cold.
That's right. You might
notice that my voice is a little little different this time around. I'm on the tail end of a kind of a bad head cold, and I don't tend to get a lot of sleep. So this is really interesting.
Well, it is interesting. The more we look at sleep, the restorative sleep, the more we see how important it is. We know that people who get 5 hours of sleep, you know, have many more problems in terms of the ability to concentrate and so on. But we're beginning to see that it affects other areas of the body. This particular study looked at the ability of catching a cold or not. And it looked at individuals who got less than 7 hours of sleep, and they appear to be 3 times as more likely to develop a respiratory illness when they're connected to a cold virus. And let me tell you about the study. Fascinating study. 153 healthy men and women, average age in their 30s. This was done over a period of time. They were interviewed daily over a 2-week period. How much sleep did they get? What percentage of their time in bed was spent asleep? You know, called sleep efficacy. You know, how often were they reading, whether they felt rested, and then they were quarantined. Okay, so we knew what their sleep patterns were. They were quarantined, and they got nasal drops containing the common cold rhinovirus.
I love this virus. They put them in a hotel. They gave everybody $800 or something, and then shot them up with
I don't know. And they got paid. They got paid money. 5 days afterwards, they reported if they had any signs or symptoms. Then they had mucus samples taken. 28 days later. They had viral cultures taken during that, and then they had blood cultures. Well, the less an individual slept, the more likely that he and she actually developed the cold. Lower sleep efficacy was associated with developing the cold. In other words, if you laid in bed and you didn't sleep, you were more likely to get a cold. Participants who spent less than 92% of their time in bed asleep, in other words, the ones who basically weren't sleeping, were 5 times more likely to actually get the cold than people who basically were in there. Now, here's the other interesting thing. Whether or not you were feeling rested or not had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
You could wake up and say, you know, I don't really feel rested at the end of a good night's sleep. It had nothing to do with it. It had to do with how much sleep you actually got. The more sleep you got, the better off you were. And we know this data comes on top of the heart attack data that shows that people who sleep 7 hours a night have fewer heart attacks.
So if I could sleep 7-8 hours a night, I wouldn't have this cold right now.
You wouldn't have the cold. You wouldn't be at risk for having a heart attack. You would feel better. You would become more handsome. People would love you more. Your life would be much better. Go for it.
Well, let's see if I can make it to the end of the hour here. Welcoming next a caller in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hello. How are you doing?
Fine. Sort of fine. How can we help?
Let's see. So my stepfather has had sinus problems for over five years, and he has sinus pressure and sinus headaches. And he hasn't been able to get rid of it, to get rid of the problem.
Sure. Does he smoke?
No smoking. Well, one thing I would say is my mom does smoke like one or two cigarettes a night or something.
Okay, so your mother smokes. She's in the house. She should get out of the house and not smoke.
Right.
I mean, that's a big issue. Smoke. So we've now identified a very key issue. Mom smokes in the house. And there's a new concept called third-hand smoke. Not second-hand smoke with people smoking, but third-hand smoke is where you have smoke and particles on your clothing. And, you know, when somebody walks into your house, if they're a smoker, you can tell right away. Well, it turns out those also appear to have carcinogens and toxins on them, and they then get into your environment. Mm. So a smoker who comes into your house who doesn't smoke but smells of smoke leaves their dust, if you will, their toxic dust in your house.
This is so, good news for my mom not smoking anymore.
Absolutely, 150%. Tell your mother that she should be naked smoking in the garage. And then she will no longer bother her husband, and that's what she does.
This is
going to
go over well.
That's what she does. Well, she could take off all of her clothes and put on smoking clothes, then take off the smoking clothes and the regular clothes in the garage. But seriously, secondhand smoke and third-hand smoke are an important issue for your dad that's in there. Now, let's go to the treatment. Has he had nasal steroids, where he put steroids in his nose for allergies, nasal sprays?
Not that I know of. He does He does sinus steamer and rinses.
Mm-hmm.
And,
good,
of course,
good.
He takes over-the-counter sinus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it.
Well, I think the sinus rinses and the sinus steamers are good. Sometimes topical steroids in the nose, drugs in the nose that are used, such as Flonase, are excellent. They'll reduce that. There also are different when he uses a neti pot, these are one of the nasal washers that are very, very common. There also are a number of other older remedies that are 100 years old that you can use, and they have eucalyptus in them. And for some people, they like them. And the name is now slipping my mind. But if you Google nasal rinse, you will get a variety of saline rinses out there. And the salt rinses are the typical rinses. But I would try to use one of the other rinses that are out there that are made with eucalyptus oil.
So you don't recommend salt rinses?
No, the salt rinses are good. But if he's still having sinus troubles, I would try them. And the name is just not – it's not in my mind. But if you go to our website, I will list a number of nasal rinses that you can use on the website, including the one that I can't remember because it's not coming into my brain as much as it's there. But I'll put that on the website, and I would try the other nasal rinses because sometimes they're good. But once again, get rid of the smoke, and he might get rid of his sinuses, and it might help your mother live longer.
I know. Okay, excellent. Well, that sounds great. I wrote it all down, so.
Great.
Yay, excellent. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba in Whitewater, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
I don't know how this relates to the original topic, but it does include, it might relate to the previous caller's smoking issue. But I have a family member who is two or three mini strokes, and I was wondering, and he seems healthy. He's been to the doctor. His cholesterol, his blood work looks good, good blood pressure. So he seems healthy, but he's an avid smoker, a pack a day, and I was wondering if there's any connection between this smoking and the mini strokes he seems to be suffering.
100%. There's definitely a connection. There's no doubt about it. It's the major risk factor along with high blood pressure. You know, if his blood pressure is under control and his cholesterol is under control, often people with strokes have to have their cholesterol driven lower. Looking at diet, you look at all the risk factors, and the answer is smoke is a major risk factor. Yeah, 100%. Most people who smoke do not die of lung cancer. Only 10% of the people who smoke die of lung cancer. 90% of the people do not have lung cancer. But if you look at them, on the average, they lose about 10 years of life, a decade of life. And most of that is for heart disease and stroke and from chronic bronchitis and emphysema. So there are a couple issues that are important here. First of all, it takes the average smoker 4 times to quit. They don't quit right away. There are aids that are out there. There are medications, Chantix, which is a good medication, bupropion, an antidepressant, a good medication, the patch, any sort of nicotine replacement is good. And I think, say you've had strokes and why don't you try to quit? People give the excuse, well, I've been smoking this long, I can't quit. Frankly, I found it very difficult to quit when I was in college. I only smoked for 3 years, and it took me 4 times to quit.
Yeah.
So I tell people all the time, once you get the habit, it's hard to quit. It doesn't matter, really, if you've had the habit for 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. It's always difficult to quit. But as soon as you quit, you get value. So that's your goal, is to tell him that his mini strokes are from the smoking, because they are. Now, if you get mini strokes, you're at risk for a big one. And I tell people, well, heart attack, you're going to die. A lot of people in their 50s go, well, if I die, I'm going to die. I don't care about death. And I go, okay, well, what about a stroke? Oh, I don't want a stroke because I don't want to be disabled. Well, a stroke disables you. And if he's smoking and he's had many strokes, he's at a risk for a big one. And that is avoidable if he quits smoking. Chances are much less.
I'll do my best. Thanks a lot for the advice.
Good luck. You can help. Sometimes it's that one word that kicks people over. I've seen it over and over again. Someone says something and they quit. So go for it.
Yeah, thanks. We appreciate the call. Society and governments are making it easier for people to quit smoking because of all the rules and regulations that are being clamped on. You can't smoke here. You can't smoke there. Which that's a very good thing.
Huh? Oh, absolutely. And taxes. As soon as taxes went up, teenagers stopped smoking as much. So all of the society issues are there to play a role. Remember, 50% of the people smoked in 1970. Yeah. 50% of the adults.
Yeah. Saw an old clip on some TV program a while back, of the tobacco people standing up at some testifying before Congress. our product is not habit forming. Remember that?
There we go. And there we go.
Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with dreaming. Is it true that people dream in black and white?
The answer is yes, and the answer is no. And the answer is yes and no, because it appears to be an age-related issue. For many, many years, I was taught when I went to medical school that people dream in black and white, and rarely do you have color dreams. So that's what I was taught. Mm-hmm. And that was back in medical school in the 70s. Okay, so that's what I was taught. I still remember talking to the psychiatrist about this because I tended to dream in color, and I thought maybe I was abnormal. And he said, well, you're not abnormal, but most people dream in black and white. Well, here's the skinny on it.
Yeah.
It appears that people under the age of 25 and 30 dream in color.
Good. Come on.
And people over the age of 30 now dream in black and white. But it's not an age-related issue. It appears to be related to television. If you grew up with black and white television, you are more likely to have dreams in black and white. And if you grew up with color television, who has black and white anymore, you're more likely to dream in color. So it appears that TV, now I have no idea what happened pre-television because they didn't measure that.
Yeah.
But it appears that television affects what, and when you're growing up, what kind of, whether or not you dreamt in color.
Well, that's fascinating, but I don't believe it for a second.
Well, do you dream in black and white or
I don't have a clue. I dream all
wait
the time.
Wait a minute.
Well, I don't know whether it's color or black and white.
Well, think about it. Well, think about your last
dream. I had a dream last night.
Yeah, what was it? Color or black and white?
It was about this show, doing this radio program.
What was it, black and white?
I don't know. You were there and I was there and Adam and Brad were there.
What were we doing?
We were doing it in a public setting.
Oh, public setting.
And
were we clothed? Did we have our clothes on?
We were like we are now, but it was like in a public place and there were people mulling around.
Black and white or color?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a memory problem.
But Adam told me.
You have a memory problem.
I couldn't see Adam because they were in some different room.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he came and opened the door and said, start the show.
Yeah, black and white
and
color.
I thought to myself, shouldn't we be able to see the producer while we're doing the program? So I started to say, from PRI, public, and a family walked by and kids were crying. And I turned around and said, I'm sorry, we're doing this live radio program. Do you mind if you could keep your kids from crying? It was terrible. But I don't have a clue if it was in black or white. I think it might have been in color.
See?
But that would
might have been in color. Then it was a special dream for you.
In any case, if you have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, then send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones at 800-462-7413. A listener in Medford, Oregon now. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, about 2 years ago, I woke up with an extremely dry mouth and red eyes. And ever since then, I've been trying to get rid of these bloodshot eyes and dry mouth. And I went to an eye doctor. He said, my vision is fine. Use these drops. I've tried every drop on the shelf, including Restasis, herbal remedies. I put cucumbers on my eyes. Nothing works.
Does it bloodshot more any particular time of day?
Well, I wake up in the morning and they're bloodshot, but by 9 o'clock they're slits. I can't even keep them open. They're so sore.
Oh, that's a terrible
problem. So now you've been to an ophthalmologist, an eye doctor. Okay. Did they recommend lubricating eye drops?
The what eye drops?
Lubricating eye drops. Eye drops that would produce extra lubricant like liquid tears. They're sort of a viscous eye drop, kind of a thick eye drop.
She's taken it.
You know, I've done all those, doctor, and it just makes it worse.
Okay. So the over-the-counter eye drops have made it worse. Have you done any prescription eye drops?
Prescription eye drops.
Yeah. And I'll tell you the reason. Acular, A-C-C-U-L-A-R, maybe it's A-C-U-L-A-R, spelling was never my strong suit, is Ketorolac eye drop. It's an eye drop with an anti-inflammatory. If you haven't tried it, that's the one I would try.
Okay.
And it's a prescription-only eye drop.
It
reduces inflammation. And there's another anti-inflammatory eye drop that's a cousin of it, which is another, and the name, once again, slips my mind, but it's similar to Ketorolac. You'll need a prescription for this. That's what I would try. I would take the Ketorolac eye drops 3 to 4 times a day, but I would definitely, at nighttime when I'm sleeping, I would take liquid tears ointment. You can buy that over the counter without a prescription. You put the ointment in your eyes when you go to sleep. Have you humidified your bedroom?
You know, I did. Uh-huh. I got a humidifier, and it helped us in every other way.
That's right.
Except
but,
for my eyes.
No, but it makes a difference. You keep good idea. Keep humidifying the bedroom. You
okay.
need liquid tears ointment at bedtime, and you need ketorolac eyes during eye drops during the day, or one of the other anti-inflammatory eye drops. By prescription only. Try it.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure.
Hope it helps, and we thank you for the call. Before we get out of here for the week, Zorba, it's time to pay a fine to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. Several of our deputies cited you on this one, but Chris from Park Ridge, New Jersey, took pity on you and let you off with just a warning. On a recent show, you used the word irregardless. To which Deputy Chris replies,
"There is no word.
I was raised in believing that this is not a word. But before sticking my foot in my mouth, I decided to check if indeed it was. Merriam-Webster Dictionary says it is a word, a hybrid, if you will, but recommends using the word regardless instead.
It's very interesting. For many years, people have said irregardless is not a word, but our language is fluid. And,
yes.
it's inventing
yes.
words all the time. Google
yes.
was not a word. It's now in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
Right.
And the fact is, irregardless was not a word, but as of today, irregardless is a word.
Well, it is, according to the dictionary.
And it is, according to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, and according to Zorba Pastor, it is a word.
But it says in the dictionary, and I'm quoting, only idiots use this word. That was cruel. That was cruel.
That was cruel.
That was cruel.
Tom.
What
that
a way to
bad.
End the show.
That was bad.
Oh, my God. Take it
bad,
back.
Tom. Bad, take, bad, take it, bad.
If you want to be deputized.
Tom, irregardless of you're using the word, I still like
it. And I'm really appalled. If you want to be deputized into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police and catch Zorba or me in the act, or if you want to take me to task for being nasty to the good doc.
In the act.
Send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week.
A pleasure to be here, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Charles Monroe Kane is the suit in charge. And our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0116Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.